This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
Etta James, the legendary rhythm and blues and pop vocalist, died last week due to complications from leukemia. She was 73. James started recording at the age of 15 and had her first hit when she was just 17. She became an established R&B vocalist, but also had successful pop hits, including her best known, At Last, recorded in 1961. John Perellas of the New York Times wrote in 1990 that she had one of the great voices in American popular music, with a huge range, a multiplicity of tones, and vast reserves of volume. Etta James had an erratic career as tastes in popular music evolved, and she battled heroin and cocaine addictions. But she won 4 Grammy Awards and is in both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Blues Hall of Fame. Terry spoke with Etta James in 1994.
You grew up in a foster home. I think when your mother had you, she was 14 years old.
Right. She was a kid. And, you know, I had feelings about all that kind of stuff for years, and I went to therapy and all about it. But then as I got older, I realized that she really did the best for me. She put me in a lovely home. The people were, you know, lovely to me. They never said that they were my real parents. I mean, I always knew I had this good-looking, you know, high-stepping mom, and she was like only 14 years older than me. And so she did the best for me, because if she had tried to take me with her, she was just a child, what would she have done with me? Would I have been singing today? Would I have been anything, you know?
What was your foster family like?
They were lovely. They were older people, and they had property, and they lived in the east side, lower east side of Los Angeles. And my grandmother was a church lady, and they believed in, they gave me singing lessons at 5.
When you were singing in the church choir, did your grandmother or anyone else in the family get upset if on your own time you sang blues or any kind of secular music?
No, because my grandmother died when I was 12. So I sang gospel music from 5 until 12. And so my grandmother, she wasn't one of those kind of people, because I was already the prodigy child of the church. And I did nothing but, and I loved church. I went to Bible camp, and I was a little Christian girl. And until my grandmother passed away at 12, that is when my mother came to get me. Because I had nothing but my grandfather there in the house, and my mother wanted me to be with her. And she came the day of the funeral to pick me up, to take me back to San Francisco. So that's at San Francisco. Oh, I was listening to little stuff on the sly, but I wasn't interested in secular music. But once I got to San Francisco, I grew horns and a tail. And I really turned into, you know, the real street kid. I was kind of like a runaway, but I had a mother, you know what I mean? And I had a place to stay.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to play one of your rhythm and blues recordings that has a very gospel sound to it. Now, I want to play Something's Got a Hold on Me from 1961. Do you think of this as having a gospel sound?
Matter of fact, it is a gospel song. We wrote that song, and we adapted it from a gospel song. And the gospel song was Something's Got a Hold on Me. It must be the Lord.
And in your song, it must be love.
It must be love, right. Now, don't get me, because I'm not the one who decided to, but I was one of the writers. I just kind of said, okay, well, let's go rock and roll.
This is Etta James, recorded in 1961.
Sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. Yeah. I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before. No, no. Yeah. I just tell you right now that ooh, I believe, I really do believe that something's got a hold on me here.
It wasn't too long after you moved in with your mother that you actually went on the road. I mean, Johnny Otis, who had a now famous rhythm and blues touring review, got you into the show. He discovered you. But how did you audition for him? How did you find him, or he find you?
Well, he really found me because at that time, I had ran away from home. And I went and I stayed with two girls, one named Abby and Jean, who later became the Peaches. You know, it used to be Etta James and the Peaches. We had wrote an answer to the song Work With Me, Annie.
The Hank Ballard record.
Right. So during those days, you know, everybody would make an answer. You'd said, Work With Me, Annie. Then we'd said, Roll With Me, Henry. And so one night, the young girl and myself, we were the same age. I think we were both like 16, and the older sister was like 24. And she went out to a dance in the Fillmore district, which was, you know, a heavy drag district of San Francisco. She went to see the Johnny Otis band. All of a sudden, we got a call that night, and it was Abby calling us back to say, listen, guess who I'm with? I'm with Johnny Otis. And we go, oh, Johnny Otis. And he said, yeah, Johnny Otis. I told him that we have a girl group, and he says he wants to hear us. And I said, yeah, right. And she says, oh, he's at the hotel there and all the band and everything. And myself and the girl, we looked at each other and said, yeah, right. Now we're 15-year-olds and we're going to go to the hotel with the band and Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis was like about a 34, 35-year-old man. So we said, oh, no, that's all right. That's all right. We'll cool that and everything. So Johnny Otis snatched the phone from her. And it was Johnny Otis. You know, we heard that voice, you know. And he said, hi, how you doing? And we said, oh, we're doing all right. He says, I hear you guys got a great group. I hear you got a couple of songs, and I'd like to hear you. And he says, how about catching a cab? I'll pay the cab fare, and I'll meet you out front. He said, don't worry. Nobody's going to bother. He says, okay. So we got up and got dressed, got in the cab, and went down there. Sure enough, as we pulled up, we saw this tall man. You know, we'd all seen pictures of Johnny Otis with the nice hair, and he looked like a tall, kind of like a Creole man with a nice mustache and a beard, and he had, you know, and the nice pompadour hair. And when we got there, he said, oh, I'm glad to see you, and come on up and let's hear you. So we went upstairs to his room and we sang How Deep Is the Ocean and For All We Know and Street of Dreams.
So you auditioned for Johnny Otis. He liked your singing, I suppose,
right,
and invited you to go on the tour, but you were still a minor. Did he have to get your mother's permission?
Well, that was a trick there. I knew my mother wasn't going to let me go, but I told him. He says, how old are you? I said, 18, which he knew that was a lie. And he says, well, you know what? I would like to take you guys to Los Angeles tomorrow to make a record. And he says, can I speak with your mother? I said, no, I can't find her right now. She's working. And he says, well, can you go home and get permission from your mother, get something in writing stating that you can travel and you're allowed to travel with me and have her to sign it and date it? I said, oh, yeah, I can do that. So sure enough, that's what I did. I went home. I wrote the note.
Oh, I see, right.
And I brought the note back with a tiny little bag, a little plastic bag or something with some clothes in it, and myself and the two girls got on Johnny's bus, and we split to L.A.
So why don't we hear the first song that you recorded after going on the road with Johnny Otis, and it's Roll With Me, Henry, also called Wallflower.
And called Dance With Me, Henry.
Called Dance With Me, Henry, also. And this is Etta James.
Hey, baby! What do I have to do to make you love me too?
You got to roll with me, Henry.
All right, baby.
Roll with me, Henry.
Don't mean maybe.
Roll with me, Henry.
Any old time.
Roll with me, Henry.
Won't change my mind.
Roll with me, Henry.
All right.
You better roll.
No, after you recorded this, Georgia Gibbs did a cover recording of this called "Dance with Me, Henry," and right. was that supposed to be the tamer version?
During those days, you weren't allowed to say "roll," because "roll" was like a vulgar word. You know what I mean? Think about it. They would probably burn Prince at the stake. Right? But you couldn't say "roll." So rather than they banned my record from the air, what we had to do was sell it underground, and not only that, change the title to "Wallflower." And then when Georgia Gibbs did it, she just made the "Dance with Me, Henry," so that, you know, all the kids could go buy it and, you know, take it home and, you know, listen to it, because their parents weren't going to go for no roll. Are you kidding? Roll with me? How do you roll with somebody?
Etta James speaking with Terry Gross, recorded in 1994. James died last week at the age of 73. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening to Terry's interview with Etta James, who died last week. They spoke in 1994, after James released the album Mystery Lady, which paid tribute to the great jazz singer Billie Holiday and won James the Grammy for Best Jazz Vocal Performance.
At some point in your career, you started dressing in evening gowns for performances and dyeing your hair blonde. Tell me how you created that onstage image for yourself.
I think probably by me being so young, and I was oversized like I am now, but I mean, I had a real nice figure and I was tall. And I remember this singer, Joyce Bryant. She was a black singer, and I always admired her. And I had two role models. I liked Joyce Bryant because she wore fishtail gowns, sequin fishtail gowns, and she was black, and she had the nerve to wear platinum hair. And then I also loved Jane Mansfield, because Jane Mansfield had the blonde hair and had the poochy lips and the mole and all this. So I think what I did was kind of combined. My mother had bleached my hair carrot red at one point, and then I said, well, maybe that's not flamboyant enough. So I just kind of went into Detroit one day, and one of the fellas over there said, oh, Miss James, why, you would probably look fabulous with platinum hair. So he bleached my hair blonde, and it looked good. And what I was doing was trying to be a glamour girl, because I had been a tomboy most of the time, and I wanted to look grown. You know, I wanted to wear tall, high-heel shoes and fishtail gowns and big, long rhinestone earrings, you know.
So how long did you dye your hair?
For how long?
Yeah.
I think, most of my career. It was blonde, platinum blonde, all the way, I would think, up into the 70s. Maybe the 72 and 73, something like that.
And why'd you stop?
Well, I think things had changed. I know things had changed, and my career wasn't happening, and I didn't think that I needed to be that, you know, that to attract that much attention. Another thing, I was on drugs at that time, and I think I really wanted a low profile.
Wait, was it difficult for you to give up drugs?
Not when I got down to, you know, I'd given it up many a time. You know, mm-hmm. I'd kicked my habits many a time. But when I went in 1974, I gave heroin up. I was on methadone for maybe 3 or 4 years before that. So I had a couple of things to give up.
Was it hard to make a comeback after you stopped using?
No, not really, because when I stopped using, I wasn't the kind that went around and wanted people to pat me on the back about it. It's just that I just picked up the ball and started running with it. The thing was, when I went to this rehabilitation center, I was around nothing but a lot of white kids. And the thing where they were all younger than I was. And I remember on Saturdays, they would play all these great rock and roll records. The thing was, I was doing R&B, remember? But the ZZ Tops and the Rod Stewarts and the Rolling Stones and all those people, I was busy using drugs. I wasn't there when Woodstock. I was there in New York when Woodstock was going on, but I didn't want to go to Woodstock. I would rather go to Harlem, you know. And when I was in the program on Saturdays, we'd be cleaning up. They would be playing songs from all these people. And I would say, "Ooh, man, that music is really happening." And then what really made me think it is because my song, I'd Rather Go Blind, they had a version of it by Rod Stewart. And they kept saying, "Hey, this is the song you wrote. Listen." And I said, "All right."
In 1978, you opened in some cities for the Rolling Stones on their tour. Were the Stones fans of yours?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, when I was in rehab at the same rehab center in the 70s, 74 and 75, I got a letter from Keith Richards that had said to me that they were getting ready to do a tour. You know, they had Tina Turner, and they had B.B. King, and they had different people on their tour. And they had wanted me on their tour. And the letter that they wrote came to the rehabilitation center, and the therapist got the letter, and he called me to his office and read the letter, and the letter said that he said, "We would like to have you on tour with us. We love your music." And he says, "But what you're doing right now is more important than what we could ever do with you, but we'll be sure to come back and get you when you're ready." And that was really cool. That was when they came back in 78 and kept their word.
I'd like to close our interview with another selection from your new album of songs that were recorded by Billie Holiday. I thought we could play How Deep Is the Ocean, since this is one of the songs you sang many years ago when you auditioned for Johnny Otis. What do you think is the difference between what the song means to you now and what it meant to you then, and how you sing it now and how you sung it then?
Probably it's because now I really understand, you know what I mean? I understand what I'm singing about. You know, songs that I get, any song that I decide to sing or a song that someone sends to me or recommends, I like to be able to relate to that song, not just, you know, have a song there that talks about come fly me to the moon, let me dangle on the stars. That's not my cup of tea. That's not real. I want to sing real stuff. I want to know what I'm singing about, and I want to be able to really relate to that, and I think that's what I can do now. I think that's what I definitely do. Matter of fact, I know I do.
Etta James, it's been a pleasure. I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry.
How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times a day do I think of you? Are sprinkled with dew. Ooh, how far would I travel to be where you are? How far is the journey from here to a star. And if I'd ever lost you, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? Baby, how high is the sky?
Etta James. Terry spoke with her in 1994. James died last week at the age of 73.